This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Before we get into today's episode, I want to give an update about a case that we covered all the way back in episode 177. So very long time ago. It was basically last January, a year ago.
Oh, wow.
So that episode covered the Colonial Parkway murders. And This week there was a pretty big update about one of the murders in that case. So as a brief reminder, the Colonial Parkway murders was a series of double homicides that took place along the Colonial Parkway in Virginia between 1986 and 1989. So it was several double homicides. And over the years, the cases were connected because of similarities. And some believe that there was a serial killer operating in the area. But others do not believe the cases were connected. And officially, per like authorities, they're not connected.
Right.
But there are still a lot of people who have said there was a serial killer and they're connected. But this week, one of the double homicides was solved thanks to DNA.
Oh, interesting.
So a man named Alan Wade Wilmer Sr. has been linked to two of the murders, one of the double homicides.
Okay.
And this man has never been convicted of a felony. He died on December 15th, 2017 at age 63. So we'll never get to hear a confession, what he did or anything. But a DNA profile from him was linked to two of the Colonial Parkway murders. Now, we don't know what the led depth. Investigators to him. We don't know like what made them get his DNA profile, but all the reports say is that a DNA profile was only able to be legally obtained after his death. So they never had anything to arrest him or get his DNA when he was alive. He wasn't in the system at all because he had never been convicted of a felony. So they weren't able to get his DNA profile. But like I said, we don't know what led them to him. We don't know if he was a suspect earlier on, like we don't know. His name wasn't mentioned in any of the reports previously, but we don't know if like maybe he was, you know, on their radar or what.
That's so interesting because I mean to say we've cracked the case. This is the guy. Like they must have some pretty damning evidence.
It's definitive DNA evidence, and they didn't say this for sure, but it sounds like it was DNA evidence from a sexual assault.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. So that would pretty much be the only thing I could think of.
Yeah.
But then I could play devil's advocate and be like, okay, maybe because it was two murders. Yeah. Were they both sexually assaulted?
No.
So that's true. I don't know. Yeah. That's a tough one because he's, you know, deceased and he can't be questioned or interrogated.
Exactly. You don't really know for sure. But that being said, these victims were killed with the same gun found right next to each other. So it's very likely that it was the same killer. Now, just a little bit of information about the murders. So again, all the details are in episode 177. But on September 21st, 1987, a truck belonging to 20-year-old David Nobling was found along the James River. And the truck was abandoned. It was unlocked and turned on with the windshield wipers still going. So it was completely abandoned. The night before, David had been with 14-year-old Robin Edwards, and the two were now missing when the truck was found.
Okay.
And 3 days later, David and Robin were found shot to death near the south bank of the James River.
Which would make more sense why she would have potentially likely been the only one sexually assaulted because the other victim was a male.
Exactly.
So, okay. Yeah. I'm good with that. And this is a case I think about ever since you shared it. I think about it literally all the time, especially when we go up to Virginia to visit my in-laws. I'm always like, wow, this is like right where this happened.
Yeah. And I believe
it's wild.
If you listen to the episode, you'll probably hear it. But I believe I thought to cover this because a listener wrote in a listener story about like their mom, I believe.
Yeah, being almost a victim or something. Yeah.
So freaking crazy. But
yeah.
So at this point, no forensic or physical evidence currently links the double homicide of David and Robin to the others. So even though there's similarities, they're not definitively linked by any evidence.
Right.
And Wilmer has not been linked to any of the other murders, but there are still several unsolved murders in the area, and he could be connected to them. Investigators are actively pursuing leads on the other killings, and they haven't ruled anything out, including Wilmer's potential involvement.
Okay. I mean, that's fair, because he could have been involved and just not left any DNA at the scene, but it's kind of bewildering that he had no criminal record. Like,
it is. And he actually, with this DNA profile, was also linked to another murder. So he was linked to the murder of 29-year-old Teresa Lynn Howell. And she was strangled to death in 1989. And she was actually found at a construction site about 11 miles from where David and Robin were found. And this was 2 years later.
Okay.
So she was found in the same area, but she was never linked to the other Colonial Parkway murders because those were all double homicides, and her murder, it was just her.
Interesting.
And until this DNA match, her case and David and Robin's cases were not suspected to be connected at all.
Yeah. And it's really not out of the realm of possibility that he could be connected to the other cases and just there be no DNA. Now that I know that he was sneaky, he got away with it. So he could have easily gotten away with those other murders.
I truly believe that he's connected to at least other murders, whether or not it be the like quote unquote Colonial Parkway murders or not.
Right.
I definitely think he's connected to other murders.
Yeah.
And investigators are not ruling out that possibility. They say they're working to reconstruct his movements and encounters with others during his lifetime. So I'm going to share just a little bit of information about him. Because, you know, they're asking the public for help.
Okay.
So Wilmer was 5'5", muscular, and weighed around 165 pounds. He had sandy brown hair, blue eyes, and a close-cropped beard. In the late 1980s, he drove a blue 1966 Dodge Fargo truck with the license plate EMRAW. He also had a white pickup truck, a van, and a silver 1989 Ford F-150. And around that time, he also lived on a small commercial fishing boat named the Denny Wade, and he was known to dock along rivers and the Chesapeake Bay.
Oh, perfect cover for a fucking serial killer.
Truly.
Multiple cars, living on a boat, can travel anywhere within that, you know, waterway.
Yeah. And he was like a fisherman, so he, you know, that job allowed him the flexibility.
Wow.
So,
insane.
So, yeah, I just wanted to share that update. We love seeing a cold case solved and, you know, hopefully more people will get answers because I really don't believe that those are the only murders he committed.
No, me either.
But with that, let's get into today's episode.
Okay.
Starbucks is a wildly popular coffee chain that first opened in 1971 in Seattle's Pike Place Market. The chain is known for their pumpkin spice lattes, their holiday drinks, and various coffee blends, along with their Starbucks cups, mugs, and so much more. It has become a staple for many Americans and people all around the world, and it's only increasing in popularity. But at one store in Washington, D.C., a horrific crime took place that would forever be connected to the chain. This is the story of the murders of Mary Mahoney, Emery Evans, and Aaron Goodrich.
I saw this come in on our request, and I was like,
I think it's been requested.
I've never heard of this. We just recently got a request, actually.
Oh, maybe that's why I thought to cover it. So I actually covered this on my TikTok like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think it was after I covered the Lululemon murder on my TikTok, somebody was like, oh, cover the Starbucks murder.
One. Yeah.
But then I kind of like forgot about it, and I must have seen it come in then. And I was like, wait, I remember that. And then I decided to put it together for an episode.
Yeah.
So for a little bit of background, in 1997, over 1,400 Starbucks stores were open around the world, including 62 in the Washington, D.C. area and 10 in the city alone.
Wow.
I know, right? It's crazy. I literally had
obviously.
three Starbucks within 5 minutes of me. Like,
we didn't, and then we didn't get a Starbucks in my area until like after I moved out of the area, which was in like the mid, early 2000. I don't even know.
That's but wild.
Yeah. So 1997, wow, we were like way behind.
Yeah. A little bit. That's Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter, and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode. At the store at 1810 Wisconsin Avenue Northwest in Burleith, a neighborhood just north of Georgetown in Washington, D.C., an employee going into work at 5:15 a.m. on July 7, 1997, found a horrific scene. When she walked into the store, it was a mess. And as she went further in and went into the back room, she found three of her fellow employees all dead after having been shot multiple times.
So crazy. Why do people do that?
You'll find out.
Okay.
The employee ran out of the store immediately, yelling that people had been shot. She was able to flag down a Metro bus that was passing by, and the bus driver called the police. Because 1997, you know, can't just pull out your smartphone.
Yeah. I don't think.
Call 911.
I think that was when people were kind of starting to get.
Yeah, but they were like big, like they
chunky,
weren't.
Chunky. Yeah.
Yeah. So when police arrived at the scene, they found those three employees shot to death, and they had all been shot multiple times, but no weapon was found. Nothing was taken from the store, and there was very, very, very little evidence. Investigators were able to determine that the triple homicide likely took place around the time the store closed the night before. The store closed at 8 p.m., so it's believed it took place between like 8 and 9:30 p.m.
Okay.
A resident of the neighborhood that visited the Wisconsin Avenue Starbucks daily recalled that he passed by the store around 10 p.m. and saw that the lights were on, which was odd because typically the store closed sooner than 10 p.m. on Sundays. Like I said, it closed at 8 p.m.
Right.
And the resident said he walked by that store all the time around that time, and it was typically dark after 8 p.m. on Sundays. So he said, quote, I remember remarking that they were still open, and I was surprised.
Well,
according to a Washington Post article published the day after the victims were discovered, homicide detectives and crime scene technicians spent hours at the store dusting for fingerprints, searching for evidence, and talking to residents living in the area. But there just wasn't really any evidence. Literally, the only thing left behind were 10 shell casings from two different caliber guns.
And I guess it was too early to have CCTV or security footage in every corner of every block.
There was no security footage. And there was also no sign of forced entry. and no money had been taken from the cash register, and the safe in the back of the store was left unopened. Okay. So it didn't seem like robbery was a motive. They began to question if the victims could have been a target, but there was no indication of that either. The victims were 25-year-old Mary Catron Mahoney, 25-year-old Emery Allen Evans, and 18-year-old Aaron David Goodrich.
They were so young. That's so sad.
I know. Mary was the night manager of the store, and she had been working there for some time. Emery had started working there part-time just 3 weeks before, and Aaron had begun working there part-time a few months before. So Mary Mahoney, also known as Katie, had two older siblings who she just loved. She also loved animals, especially horses. And she had recently taken in her sister's toothless black and white alley cat named Marlou. Oh,
toothless.
Right?
Poor thing.
She graduated from Townsend State University near Baltimore, Maryland with honors. And after that, she interned for President Clinton, where when he was first elected, and she was working to arrange tours at the White House. But Katie was passionate about her job at Starbucks. She became a manager, and she was super proud of that, and she loved it. She didn't like disciplining employees, and she had actually recently had to dismiss an employee for allegedly stealing several hundred dollars, and she hated that.
Yeah, that's rough. I've been in that exact situation when I worked at Chick-fil-A.
I would not want to do that.
The girl on camera, and we had to let her go, and yeah.
That's rough. At least there was, like, solid evidence, though, so it wasn't, like...
Yeah, but it was still really hard, because, like, we were friends, so I had to be like, we saw you. What's up?
That's really awkward.
Yeah, it was. I cried after I did.
Yeah, I probably would, too.
And then my boss hugged me, and I was like, why'd you make me do it, you fucking asshole?
Probably because your boss didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Emery Evans was working part-time at Starbucks to save money to attend Howard University, where he was planning to study music.
Nice.
So he had moved to Washington, D.C. just 18 months before the murder, and he was excited for the next step in his life.
His father said,
quote, he was trying to do the right thing. He was a very nice kid who was just trying to make extra money.
Yeah.
Aaron Goodrich, who was just 18 years old, was really close to his father, who had helped him get a job at the Starbucks. He had actually just returned from a beach vacation with his father, and he was back at work, and he was just trying to make some money.
Yeah.
Now, at first, police, since it didn't seem like it was a robbery, started suspecting that it might have been a disgruntled employee. Because like I said, Mary had recently had to fire an employee and there was no reports of it going bad, but she hated it. So, you know, maybe like the employee was upset.
I hated it too.
So police theorized that the employee may have been upset and returned to the store, engaged in an argument, and ended up shooting the employees.
Okay.
But there was no evidence of this. I don't know if they talked to that employee. I'm assuming they did.
There was literally
no evidence that this was the case, and none of the victims seemed to have been targets. In the store's parking lot was Mary's car. It was the only car in the lot that morning left from the night before when she arrived for work. The car had a flat front tire, which was odd, but other than that, detectives noted that nothing seemed wrong with the car. Mary's grandmother had actually recently bought her the car so she could be safer in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And inside was things for her animal, a dirty tennis ball, a chew toy, a towel. But there was no sign that anyone had tried to break into the car either or try to steal the car. And there were no clues as to who could have done this.
Did they mention, like, what the source of the flat tire was? Like, was it just naturally flat? Or
they didn't.
Okay.
And actually,
that could be telling to sort of, I guess, but
the employee that arrived that morning, she actually saw the car at first and she was like, oh, that's weird. But then she saw the flat tire and she was like, oh, she must have gotten a ride home if the tire was flat. So, like, I think it just was like an unfortunate coincidence.
Yeah.
But with very little evidence to go on, no witness accounts and no leads, the murders went cold. and remained that way for about 2 years.
Okay.
In 1999, the story about the Starbucks triple homicide aired on the show America's Most Wanted, and one woman watching remembered something.
Oh,
it was just so wild when I learned that that's what led to this case being solved, because I feel like when you see those shows and they, you know, it's like always great to get
exposure. They're pleading, anybody.
Yeah. And in this case, it literally led to.
Yeah.
That's
why no matter how silly or how small or how insignificant you believe something to be, call it in anyway, because it could be the one little clue that they need to crack whatever wide open, you know?
Yep. And in this case, the woman watching the show remembered that her boyfriend had previously told her about a man he knew who said he had killed 3 people at a Starbucks. Wow. So she remembered this story. And she was like, this isn't a coincidence.
No.
So she went to the police. Investigators had her wear a wire while she asked her boyfriend more about what he knew about the crime. And I don't think this was because they suspected the boyfriend, but they just wanted like solid evidence.
Yeah.
And they were probably afraid if they went straight to the boyfriend, maybe he wouldn't want to come in.
Talk.
Even if he wasn't involved, he might be scared that he could be implicated for whatever reason.
Right. And that's fair. I mean, you know, we've seen that happen.
It happens. Yeah. So during the conversation, when she was wearing the wire, the boyfriend was talking about the crime, telling her what he knew from the story, and he mentioned things that were not publicly known. And when he said the associate's name, police finally had a lead. So from this story, police learned that the man had gone into the store armed, and he forced the employees to lay on the ground and give him access to the store's safe, which contained about $10,000. The employees refused, so the man shot all 3 of them and then fled.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's insane. So not like, you know, threaten them with a gun until they open it. You just kill them. Yep. Straight up kill them. Or just leave, maybe.
Yeah.
Go to the next Starbucks. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Try another one. Yeah. Nope.
Wow. That's sick.
I know, right? On Monday, March 1st, 1999, a man named Carl Derek Cooper was arrested and brought in for questioning related to another murder. The 1996 attempted murder of an off-duty police officer named Bruce Howard. Prince George's police had been investigating Cooper for his involvement in that murder for some time, and he was finally arrested. So Carl Cooper was raised in the D.C. area, and in 1999, he was living with his mother, wife, and their 4-year-old son.
Wow, that's sad. That poor kid.
I know. Neighbors knew him as a nice man that they had watched grow up, but at just 29 years old, Cooper was known as a career criminal who had committed other crimes in the past. None to this degree of violence, but he did have a criminal record. According to the Washington Post, Cooper had been in and out of the criminal justice system since he was arrested in 1988 for possession of cocaine. But now, the D.C. police, the Prince George's police, and the FBI were working together to build a case against Cooper for his believed involvement in 2 murder cases and 1 attempted murder case.
What in the world?
So it was kind of just a coincidence that the Prince George's police had already been like investigating him, and then they were able to arrest him on that charge,
right,
and then also interrogate him about the Starbucks murder once they brought him in. So during his interrogation about the Starbucks murders, he maintained his innocence. He claimed he was at home with his wife on the night of the murder. But then he began changing his story. And he implicated 2 others. One was a man named Keith Covington, and then another man who was never named. But he claimed that he and Covington had tried to rob the shop when Covington was the one who killed the employees.
That's convenient.
After this, 32-year-old Keith Covington was arrested on a felony weapons charge, and he was questioned for 15 hours by 8 different FBI agents.
Jeez.
But during his interrogation, he revealed that he only knew Cooper casually.
Okay.
While he did live in the same apartment building as one of the victims, he denied any involvement in the case, and he ended up passing a polygraph test, and there was no other evidence tying him to the murders.
Okay.
So police kind of began to shift their focus back to Cooper and say, maybe he wasn't telling the truth.
Yeah, your story's not looking good when you're changing it and blaming other people, pointing fingers.
Yeah.
And then their story's staying the same. Yeah.
And checks out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a source close to the investigation revealed to the Washington Post that police were suspicious of mainly just Cooper from the beginning because despite him implicating the two others, quote, an earlier statement by Cooper was 100% consistent with evidence found at the crime scene.
Okay.
Cooper was investigated for over 50 hours.
What?
And he was finally worn down and admitted to what he had done.
I guess so. 50 hours. I'd be like, just take me in.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Like, I did it. Fuck.
And thankfully this time it wasn't like a false confession.
Yeah.
He actually did it.
Yeah.
And eventually he decided to agree to a plea deal because if he was tried and convicted of the Starbucks murders and the murder of that police officer, he would be facing the death penalty. So Cooper agreed to plead guilty to 47 counts, including the three murders at the Starbucks, the 1993 murder of a security guard, and the 1996 attempted murder of the police officer, along with several robberies throughout the D.C., Maryland, and Pennsylvania areas.
It's not looking good for you.
With this, Keith Covington was released and cleared, and his felony weapons charge was dropped. After Cooper's arrest, D.C. Police Chief Charles Ramsey said, quote, it's one that took a lot longer than anybody standing here would have liked, but it was one of those that had to take this long. I know this doesn't completely relieve the families of the victims, but hopefully this will help them get some peace of mind.
Yeah.
So with his guilty plea, he would be receiving a lesser sentence than the death penalty, and prosecutors would not be able to charge his mother and wife, who have apparently were involved in related lesser crimes. So they weren't involved in the murders at all, but probably the robberies is what that meant. But right. As part of the plea deal, they wouldn't be able to charge either of them.
All right.
So with that, Carl Cooper was convicted of first-degree murder, and on April 25th, 2000, Cooper was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. The person who had committed this horrific triple homicide at a Starbucks in Washington, D.C., had been caught. After the murders, Starbucks made changes to some of their safety policies, so they now used armored trucks to transport cash, and they have better security training for their employees. The company also established a memorial fund in honor of the victims.
That's good.
Mary had a huge heart. She would always protect her brother, taking the time to go upstairs to check for the boogeyman when they were young.
Aww.
Her mother described her as brave and said, quote, she had an enormous heart. She probably would have had compassion for the person who killed her.
Wow.
The month before her death, Mary watched the 4th of July fireworks with her family in Baltimore. And her stepfather, who raised her from the age of 6, said, quote, I hugged her goodbye. That was the last time I saw her. He said, that's a heck of a way to go for a kid to go out of this world. She wasn't even in the prime of her life yet. She was 16 days away from her 25th birthday.
So messed up.
There is very little information about Emery and Aaron, but it seems like they were also incredible people and they were very loved by their families.
Yeah.
They were just working to make some money so they could thrive in the years of life they had ahead of them. But a coward trying to commit a robbery took their lives way too soon.
Yeah, for no reason. Like.
And he didn't even get the money.
Yeah. It's like, okay, sure, maybe you wanted to kill them so they it could conceal your identity, but you could have, I mean, he was masked, right?
Yeah, probably.
So you could have
just run away.
Just let them be. They were traumatized. Trust me, they were going to be
they weren't going to okay do anything.
Just trying to make money.
Yeah. So, you know, thankfully he was caught and will be spending the rest of his life in prison, but that doesn't bring them back.
No.
On July 6th, 2022, Starbucks held a ceremony at the store in remembrance of Mary, Emery, and Aaron, 25 years after their murders.
Wow.
There were 3 Starbucks aprons with each of their names displayed.
So...
I know. But that is the story of the Starbucks murders, the murders of Mary, Emery, and Aaron. Oh, like we said, senseless, freaking heartbreaking, but at least this time the person was caught, and it's incredible, like, that woman happened to be watching America's Most Wanted and happened to have heard this story from her boyfriend. Like,
I hope she got a reward. I do. I hope she got,
but I hope so too.
Something. Starbucks for life. Something. Like,
yeah, really.
I mean, gosh, to even put yourself out there. I mean, she could have potentially risked her life,
mm-hmm.
her relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had a lot at stake and she did the right thing and stepped forward. And now this person is in jail. So yep. Prison.
Yeah. And so. Who knows if he would have gotten caught, because like we said, there was no evidence,
there was
no security cameras, no witnesses, nothing. So like, unless he got caught for something else down the line and ended up confessing, who knows
if he doesn't would have sound like caught. He would have, because he didn't even really confess to when he was caught.
Yeah, until he was interrogated about it for a long time. So
yeah,
that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you for listening. We will have a brand new episode for you next week. And until then, keep it human.
Bye, guys.